Thank you for being here this morning. I want to thank my interdisciplinary team collaborators on this project, Bruce Sullivan, religious studies professor, Heidi Weymouth, psychology, both of Northern Arizona, and Diane Marie St. George, the University of Maryland, epidemiologist. And I have no relationships, commercial relationships to disclose here. Well, as you may well know, there has been a huge amount of research on the relationship between religion and health. Most of it has been conducted in Christian populations, particularly evangelicals. And there has been very little research conducted with Buddhists, particularly quantitative research. And most of the health research, related research that's been done with Buddhists has been imaging studies of the brains of meditators, of various Buddhist and non-traditions. So based upon the recommendations that have come from all this previous research on the relationship between religion, spirituality, and health, abbreviated RSH, we decided to carry out a population-based study conducted by an interdisciplinary team that I've mentioned already. And we really sought to kind of characterize the population because of the lack of studies that have been done. So we wanted to quantify the religious and health practices and to assess what relationship we might find between the two. That's backwards. Right. So we developed and conducted a web-based survey that was available for 6 months, consisting of 265 main questions with some sub-questions as well. We recruited participants through Buddhist magazines such as Tricycle, Buddha Dharma, and Shambhala Sun, and through electronic newsletters, listservs, and websites that we asked to, Buddhist websites that we asked to convey the information. We really designed this to be a cross-cutting, truly interdisciplinary research, and that we included questions on Buddhism, health, and psychological characteristics and demographic characteristics. The relationship, particularly between the psychology questions and the questions on Buddhism, were really parallel, and we also did that to some extent with the health questions. Now, let me go back to that. I guess I'll talk about that more. There were 64 questions on Buddhism that we developed ourselves with a religious studies person who is an expert in Buddhism. It's a specialty field. And we did obtain face validity from other scholars of Buddhism. The health questions we used were from national federal government surveys that have been done from the Centers for Disease Control and National Cancer Institute. The questions on Buddhism, if you're interested, are available in a recent publication from the journal Cross Currents. Now, our health questions and about health practices, health status, medical history, and so on, covered a wide range of information from self-rated health status, which some of you may know is very important, related to a lot of different kind of things, but that's included in studies. A lot of things about medical history. A dietary practices survey from the National Cancer Institute. We ask about limitations on activities and social support, and as you can see, a wide variety of other health behaviors. In order to consolidate all these various measures of Buddhism practices and beliefs, and to assess the relationship between the Buddhist practices and beliefs and the health practices, we developed a Buddhist Devoutness Index, which consisted of 13 questions. And you can see some of those here. And we believe that most scholars of Buddhism would agree that the items that we chose were most relevant to practice of Buddhism. They might disagree with the way that we weighted them. Meditation is particularly emphasized in Western practice of Buddhism, contrasted to that in Buddhist traditions in other parts of the world and traditions. So we have obtained several measures related to meditation, including frequency, amount of time spent meditating, and the type of meditation practice. And also, going on retreat is discussed in reviews of Western Buddhism, is commonly advertised in Buddhist magazines such as those that I mentioned. So we ask a number of questions about retreat as well. The health practices that we analyzed in that with the Buddhist Devoutness Index were body mass index, current cigarette smoking, engaging in moderate intensity leisure physical activity, the daily servings of fruits and vegetables that were eaten, the percent of calories in the diet from fat, following a vegetarian diet, self-reported health, diagnosis of anxiety or depression. So there were over 1,000 people who accessed the survey, and the first question that we asked them was whether or not they considered themselves to be a Buddhist or whether they only believed and practiced some aspects of Buddhism. So based on that question, 886 people said that they considered themselves to be a Buddhist. And in my report today, and in the article that was recently published, we only discussed this particular group. Some of the other groups are discussed in other publications. So here's what our population sort of looked like. In general, the respondents were highly educated. They were financially well off. They were mostly from the U.S. or U.S. territory, and mostly in the western part of the United States. 47% were in the western region of the U.S. Close to equal male and female, a few more females. 54% of our respondents were female. So just a few things about their Buddhist practices. 99% practiced some type of Buddhist meditation. 70% had attended a retreat, a formal retreat, or stayed in a monastery for intensive meditation practice. And 76% had formally taken the three refuges in the presence of other Buddhists. That is, they took sort of the vows, public vows of devoutness to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And taking that in public is a strong affirmation of Buddhist beliefs. Of those who reported an affiliation with a particular Buddhist tradition, the largest proportion identified themselves as Tibetan Buddhist. 89% had been formally instructed in Buddhist doctrines and ideas by a Buddhist monk or nun in a temple, a church, a lecture, meditation hall, and 96% said that they read and studied Buddhist scriptures. And another feature that was interesting and not to be unexpected really was that 47% of them regularly attended meetings of a sangha, a Buddhist sangha or a church, sort of indicating a solitary practice. Now, their health practices were pretty consistent with those that are recommended by agencies such as CDC. Only 13% were current smokers. 50% followed a vegetarian diet, which is sort of recommended by some Buddhist traditions, not particularly Tibetan, but some Buddhist traditions do. 50% said that they had followed a vegetarian diet for all of the past 12 months. And they defined that, we asked them a little bit more specifically, 90% of those said that they did not eat beef, pork, lamb, and so on. 71% did not eat poultry. 54% did not eat fish or seafood. 16% did not eat eggs. 11% did not eat dairy products. And a large proportion of them did adhere to the recommendations for routine physical activity and exercise on a regular basis. And this is just one of the questions here, the 78% one that's showing. We ask many questions from, for example, the Behavioral Risk Factor Survey from CDC about physical activity. So we wanted to look at the association between this devoutness index that we developed and their health practices. So we conducted logistic regression analysis on that relationship between the Buddhist Devoutness Index and their health factors. And we adjusted this in the analysis for age, for gender and income, but in many of the studies between religion and health, criticism has been that, well, if you're measuring people who go to church, and church attendance has been shown to be a strongly related to health. So they say, well, maybe it's those people who are the most healthy who go to church, and those are the ones you're measuring. So you need to measure disability. Another criticism has been that maybe it's not the religion necessarily itself. Maybe it's the social support they get from participating in that kind of group activity. So we use the measures that we took of disability and social support and included those in our logistic regression analysis as well as adjustment factors. So basically what you see here is the odds ratio for being a non-smoker of 1.15 and self-assessed health status of 1.11. Basically that means for every point increase in their devoutness to Buddhism, the respondents were 15% more likely to be a non-smoker. And for every point increase in their devoutness on the Buddhist devoutness index, they were 11% more likely to rate their health as good or excellent. So there's some of the conclusions that we would draw from the study. The Buddhists in this study were a select population, but they were this population was generally in good health. They practiced the recommended health behaviors, and they were devout Buddhists. There were a few associations between religious practices and health practices, those I pointed out being the only two. So we believe that the survey methodology and this theoretical integration of these questions in our study is applicable to study of other religions, including those less studied non-Christian religions such as Hinduism, Islam, and Judaism. And the sharing of our concepts and our research methods across these disciplines that we experienced in this study reinforced our belief in the importance of interdisciplinary teams for conducting such studies. And those of you who are kind of familiar with the literature know that most of the studies in this field are conducted by a solitary, usually single profession, particularly physicians or nurses, rather than interdisciplinary across disciplines. So we were able to identify four other sort of quantitative studies of U.S. or Western Buddhists that have been reported in the literature. Those were about activities that occurred at Buddhist centers, website users, subscribers to Soka Gakkai publications. Those included much smaller sample sizes. The questions were not as comprehensive as what we've reported here, and they did not include questions about health. So from our review of the literature, the study reported here with 886 Buddhist participants appears to be the largest and possibly only population-based religion health survey of Buddhists ever conducted. Of course, there are limitations to our study and the conclusions that we can draw. It was a cross-sectional design. We used a convenient sample, and our population had to have access to a computer, web-based skills, and the ability to read and understand English. Another limitation was that the respondents chose not to respond to some of the questions, so that reduced our sample size for some of the variables, such as body mass index, and you know that's kind of not uncommon for people to either not want to report their weight or to underreport their weight. So these factors limit our ability to generalize the results from this study and prohibit us from drawing conclusions about causality between the health factors and the Buddhist factors, behaviors. So for future study, it'd be important to conduct some studies on a representative sample. We think we'd like to do some studies on specific Buddhist traditions, looking more at Tibetan Buddhist or Zen or Theravada Buddhist. And we'd like to do some studies. We think it's important to do some studies that would not only sort of report the self-validation, but give us some additional information, such as biomedical measures like cortisol, which has been used a lot in this type of study, sort of related to stress, lipids, blood pressure, waist circumference, a number of those standard kind of biological, biomedical type of measures. And we also, because we think this model is... could be useful with the studies of the other religions, and we'd like to pursue that as well. So, thank you.